Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Tessie.
And I'm Leslie.
And on this podcast, we explore the intersection between the mother self and the other self. We know there are awesome podcasts telling you which diapers are the best, which organic baby food making companies are the best. This podcast goes to further the conversation about what makes us more than moms. And, you know, there's a social justice bent on this podcast. We're not afraid to admit that because we think using our mama bear for issues that are affecting our communities, our country, the world, is a really important thing to do as moms. Our love knows no bounds. And on this podcast, we get to talk to women who are just furthering that mama bear spirit from inside their homes, where it's loud and proud, to outside their walls as well. But on today's podcast, on Wednesdays, we don't talk about the mama bear all the time. We explore issues that are on our minds that mama bear listeners have asked us to explore. We just have a little bit of fun on Wednesdays usually. This past Monday, we dropped an interview with Jenny Barnes in which we discussed our stuff, literally our stuff, all of the items and things and pieces of clothing and furniture and books and pictures and pieces of art we all have so much of. We talked about the KonMari method of decluttering, and we even discussed our spiritual relationship to physical things.
Yes, I loved this conversation with Jenny. It was such a fascinating topic. Several years ago, I had the chance to read an advanced copy of a book called Overdressed, The Shockingly High Cost of Cheap Fashion by Elizabeth Klein. And Tessie, as you know, reading this book kind of threw me into a tailspin.
I do vividly remember this time of your life.
Yeah, so I'm excited to talk today about what I've learned over the last several years about the high cost of cheap fashion. I was able to interview this Brooklyn-based author, Elizabeth Klein, for an article that was published here in the Midwest in a Healthy Living magazine. So Elizabeth Klein reports on the fashion industry in 2012, and this was before really anyone else had done a lot of digging. And she ultimately concludes that the fashion industry is much like the food industry. It's sort of that like fast food nation, how we talk about our overconsumption of burgers and fries and then its effect on the environment and our health. Well, Elizabeth Klein talks about the overconsumption of things like t-shirts and flip-flops. Yeah. And what this does to the environment and really our psyche. So after talking with Jenny, I guess you and I thought it would be really fun to just talk a little bit more about our stuff and just sort of unpack what this book has done in my life and in so many other people's as well.
You know, we are, in full disclosure, taping this before we launch Jenny's podcast, so we don't have the listener feedback that I wish we had for it. But guess what? You're on a trip with your family right now, so this was necessary. But I have no doubt that this podcast with Jenny hit close to home for a lot of people, because if you live in America, by nature, you are kind of fed this bill of goods that we need to have a new style for every season, a new color that fits that style of the season. You know, there is this kind of thing to keep up with that, right? And to ever evolve your closet and your wardrobe, not to mention your furniture with each new house and all of that. Mm-hmm. And so today we're just going to dive into this idea. Like, what does stuff mean and how big of an impact does it have on our environment and on our psyches, like you said? And we're going to walk through the why and the how, leaving listeners, we hope, who are encouraged by Jenny and Leslie with some practical tips for living these ideas out in their own lives. So Leslie, first, just tell me about the book, because I didn't read it, mostly because I saw how it affected you and I don't want to go on a clothing fast.
It's true. But tell us about scary, it. You know, the more you know, I tell you. So it's a fantastic book, and we will, of course, link it in the show notes, but I recommend this book to everyone. I've lent my copy out countless times. I've purchased this book for people. It is such a fascinating read. So Elizabeth Klein opens this whole dialogue with a little story that I think everyone can relate to. She talks about being in New York, taking the subway, going to like a big box store like Kmart or something like that, and hitting the shoe department and finding this deal on these canvas shoes. So they were already only, I think she says, $15, but they were knocked down to $7. They were half price. And so she leaves the reader at the end of this story with this image of her buying 7 pairs of these $7 shoes and then schlepping them home on the subway. And so I think right away, I kind of could relate to that because we've all been there. We've like found these deals and we like for some reason convince ourselves that we need to take advantage of it right then. Yeah. Like the time is right. It's an impulse. And so I loved just the whole idea of the book talks about just sort of this overconsumption that we do in America. And she kind of paints it with that image.
I love that. I would call that the Target phenomenon. Like you've mm-hmm. seen the memes, right? Where I went to Target to get a roll of toilet paper and I came back with $300 worth of stuff. It's this phenomenon. Like you said, you see these red tags that show you how much you're saving. And it is, it's this impulse. Like we're just drawn in by this before we can even really think about it.
Absolutely. And I mean, we can kind of talk about just as we did with Jenny, just sort of that hole that we're really trying to fill or that we're looking for that high, that rush of finding the deal and buying things, you know, all of this plays into it. Elizabeth Klein, then, I mean, she does so much research. It's awesome. She travels all over. She travels from, you know, China to Bangladesh to the Salvation Army in her neighborhood. And she just gathers so much information and does so much great research. One thing that she writes about in the book is that as a nation, we're buying and hoarding. Those are her words, but it's right. Kind of true. We're buying and hoarding roughly 20 billion garments per year.
Oh my gosh.
And the average American, she says, buys 64 items of clothing per year. So that's per year, per person. And the reason we do it is because it's so cheap. Mm-hmm. We can buy clothes. We can buy a dress for less than we might spend going out to an average price restaurant.
It's so true.
So you can really like decide on any given day, like, am I going to buy a fancy latte today or am I going to buy a pair of pants? Like it's right. Almost that comparable.
Yeah.
So of course, you know, we can consume. And so for whatever reason, we are consuming. Mm-hmm. One thing that shocked me that she said was that used clothing is now the United States' number one export by volume.
Oh my gosh.
That the overwhelming majority is being sent to ports in sub-Saharan Africa, which it's fascinating because like, sure, it's getting sent there, but like it's also so cheaply made that it's falling apart upon arrival. You know, even when you go to like a thrift store, if you're trying to, you know, purchase something or use something that had already been used, often it's not going to last. Like it's falling apart right away.
Right, right. We were even talking after the NBA finals, you know, they print out the shirts saying both teams are champions.
Yes.
And then they ship these champions of the non or these shirts of the non-champion team to sub-Saharan Africa. So we were talking about how sad it was that if you go to Africa next year, you're going to see everybody with like the Golden State Warrior NBA champs, you know, yes. On their shirt. It is. It's an export. You're right. I hadn't thought of that until recently with the finals.
Yeah. And it is. I mean, you think that you're doing this charitable thing, but like, really, do we want to send clothes that are not going to last, that are so cheaply produced that they're going to fall apart?
Exactly.
You know? So she talks a little bit about the history of just like consumer spending in America. And it used to be in, let's see, I think it was 1900 that Americans spent about 15% of their earnings on clothing. And the numbers have just gone down since then, as far as like the percentage of your income. So depending, Mama Bears, think about how much maybe your family is making. Individual spending on clothing now is just under $1,100 a year. So like do some quick math and I can almost guarantee that the percentage that your family is spending on clothing is much less than that 15% that it used to be. Mm-hmm. And that's because it's so cheap and so accessible. You know, people used to historically have things made really well, only have like one church outfit that they wore every right? single, you know, things like that. So she kind of goes into the history of the American consumer, which I think is really fascinating to see just as a culture, how we have evolved in our obsession of and need for things, particularly clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So to add to the throwaway culture, we actually throw away almost 68 pounds per person of fibers. So that's 12.7 million tons that collectively as a society we're throwing away in this fiber waste every year.
Oh my goodness. That makes my stomach sink. That's insane.
I'm sorry for like sharing these things. And you can see why, you know, after I read this book and started digging into this a little bit, like we'll talk about later, I went on a clothing fast. I did not buy clothes for a year.
Yeah, you're right. And I can obviously see why. And listeners, if you're like me, like, oh, sometimes you just learn too much and you're like, I can't let go of one more thing. Hang on. I have a feeling Leslie's got hope for us. You've got hope for us, right?
I do. There is hope. And really what we're doing here is we're sort of like overwhelming with numbers, which is, you know, that's the strategy, right? Like we want our Mama Bear listeners to know about this.
Yes.
Even if you get just like a little bit excited about it and change one of your consumer habits, like if we all change one of our consumer habits, like we're on the right track.
Yes.
So about the environment is we don't think about what goes into producing cloth fibers, but croplands and water resources are exhausted really by our demand. A lot of our clothing is actually made of plastic. Yeah. Which is crazy. So cropland and water resources are being exhausted by our demand for cloth fibers. It's up from 10 million tons to 82 million tons annually just in the last 60 years. And so really it's a lot like this fast food industry, the fast fashion. It's cheap, it's addictive, and it's ultimately just in terms of what our earth can do, it's unsustainable.
Right.
One of the natural resources that goes into fiber production is coal and water. And every year, it's now this industry as a whole demands about 145 million tons of coal. And this is really crazy, 1.5 trillion gallons of water. And some estimates are higher.
With a T, trillion.
Trillion.
We talked about when you were in Tanzania with Zach, my husband, and your husband, Jake. We talked about the environmental impact of the ag industry, but the two combined, the agriculture industry and the clothing industry, in terms of water consumption, is insane. And like you said, totally unsustainable, completely unsustainable.
Yeah. It's crazy. So, and then of course, there's just that human side of who is making your clothing. Are they being paid livable wages? Are they working in humane conditions? I mean, probably not in a lot of cases. So that too is something that I feel really strongly about, at least considering.
That reminds me of the documentary called True Cost. It's on Netflix, so it's really accessible. We'll link to it just in case you guys have questions, because I think the website, if I remember correctly, it's been a while since I watched it, but I'm pretty sure I got on the website of the documentary, and it also had some really startling statistics. But that's a really good one for you to watch, even with your family. I think some of it was a little harder to digest, but I have it written down in a possible family movie night mm-hmm. when we want to do kind of a social justice angle for our family movie night. So watch it first, obviously, depending on the age of your children, but definitely check that out too.
Well, yeah. And the good news, I think, is that, you know, Klein was writing about this 4 years ago. So she's been researching and thinking about this for quite a while. But I've heard a lot more talk of this fast fashion in the year since she has written this book. Mm-hmm. So even like H&M, which is a huge culprit of this fast fashion, they have started doing a more sustainable line of clothing. And so people, the industry is responding to this because consumers are responding to this. Yes. So as I've followed this story since 2012, I have seen a lot of changes being made, which is a really good thing. I think people are buying more American-made clothing. They're starting to kind of question their consumer habits and how they're contributing to this cycle. And I mean, in my world, I think there's been sort of some thrift-inspired outfits coming out of my media friends, you know, so people are changing their habits.
Absolutely. I think we often forget that we get to vote with our dollars, mm-hmm. and it's the most powerful form of voting that we have in America specifically. And so if you need no other hope than that, you know, fine, you will pay a little bit more for the mm-hmm. sustainable and the not hard on the environment, not hard on the workers kind of clothing that we're talking about, but they last longer. You can feel good about them. They usually feel better on as well. We forget that we get to vote with our American dollar, which that's something you can do right now. Right now, you can change that part of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So, Leslie, I remember when you went into the fast, we all were looking at you like, oh boy, oh, how's this going to work out? Because you actually, we've talked about it before, you and I are not big spenders. Like, we don't go buy things all the time. But there were moments where you and I had find ourselves in Target at the sales section, and just happens to the best of us. So we were nervous for you. And there were moments when I looked at you and you were just like, God, I just really want this. I remember a pair of shoes at one point that you really, really wanted. But so talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, and remember our water party, just quick side note, like I'm an event shopper. And so the hardest thing about this fast that I did for a year was not buying occasion dresses or, you know, so like this big fundraiser. And I think I had you mail me a dress. I had my mom mail me a dress like, to borrow. And then I ended up hemming and like very poorly reconstructing a maternity dress. It was a stretch. I pulled it off.
You can pull it off. But tell us about the details of your year.
So the clothing fast was 100% a reaction to just learning more about the fast fashion industry. It was one that I really wanted to, number one, stop contributing to whatever I might have been contributing to. And number two, I just really wanted to understand my consumer habits better. And so, you know, like fasts often do, it makes you reflect. It makes you, you know, take the time to be a little bit more thoughtful about why you do the things that you do. Mm-hmm. So I had parameters. Basically, I didn't want to buy clothes for a year and I wasn't going to do it. And it was pretty simple. I remember thinking and even talking about it now, I realized like what a first world New Year's resolution that is.
Yeah.
There was a little old me just like, oh, I can't buy clothes this year. Like that. It's such privilege to be able to like, you know, stop yourself from buying things. So I also blogged about this partly to keep myself accountable, I think. And to really, like we talk about often, that when you write about it, then you understand it better. Mm-hmm. And so I had fun, you know, preparing just for this episode, looking back at my blog. And I realized I learned a lot from this clothing fast, and it truly did change my habits as a consumer. I think the first realization that I had was I saved so much time by not shopping or browsing for clothes. Yeah. And as I said, it's not like I was a big shopper. Like, I don't shop for recreation, you know?
Right.
I shop when I need something or I think I need something. I save so much time by not popping into Marshalls when I was in the neighborhood or whatever. I just didn't go because I knew I would be tempted to buy if I was there. Right. I feel like I got a lot of extra time that year by not spending it in any sort of store.
I can totally see how that would be true. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Another thing I noticed about that year is I actually learned to pick up a needle and thread and mend things.
I think I'll still pay for that to happen, but I hear what you're saying.
Well, you know, it's kind of embarrassing, but before I did this fast, if I had something that got a hole, I kind of considered that the end of its life, and I would toss it. And since I wasn't buying new things, I wasn't replacing things that got holes or whatever, I had to learn to mend things. And that was something kind of surprising and very practical. In the midst of this fast, I decided to have a garage sale. It's my first and only garage sale because holy goodness, those are a lot of work.
Yeah, I tried to tell you. I remember trying to warn you about that.
You did. I totally remember that too. But I was like, how hard can this be? But it ended up being so much work. So kudos to all of you who do this every summer.
True.
I think the garage sale was a reaction to the fast in that I was thinking so much about my relationship to stuff. And this was about halfway through. So we were once urban dwelling minimalists. Like, we had a tiny apartment, and so we couldn't have a lot of stuff.
Do you remember when your dining room table was actually like fastened to your wall and you just
had to
pull it down? You're right. You were quintessential minimalist.
Totally. We were such minimalists. And then we moved from our tiny apartment to not a huge house, but you know, we tripled our size probably, and then took 5 years and like filled the entire thing up.
Right.
So during this fast, I was just so anxious to be free of it all. But I was also really realizing at that time, like just getting rid of my excess, you know, all the extra flower vases, all the extra kitchen gadgets, all the jeans that I didn't really wear. Like, to others, they would be amazed by that luxury. Mm-hmm. And so even though I had a house full of comfortable, useful items, I couldn't help but, like, look at my garage full of cast-offs and feel like, gosh, who wouldn't love an extra coffee maker, you know, when yours is broken and you don't have the cash income to go replace it? So it just, I think, was a really good exercise of just understanding privilege and being thankful to be in the place where I could examine my consumer behavior and really call it what it was. So I guess that was a moment during the year that I just was like, okay, I'm living with this huge amount of tension, and it's one that I have kind of forgotten since, but was happy to be reminded of again in Monday's podcast.
I know, and I feel like that's the only thing separating most of us from doing this kind of thing, because tension is really hard to live in. You remember the adoption tension where you're living, well, I'm kind of a mom to three, but also one of my daughters over in Ethiopia, so not really. That tension was impossible, you know, it felt impossible at times, and I feel like our culture doesn't celebrate living in the tension. It really encourages you to either get through it or get around it as quickly as you possibly can. And so I think that's kind of what is the biggest hurdle for people wanting to improve this specifically, is living in that tension of being able to understand that you might not live in a Beverly Hills mansion, but you have so much stuff, you know, more than, like you said, most people. And so being able to live in the tension of saying, I have this privilege of owning this, but that doesn't mean I need to continue to buy more stuff and add to it.
Absolutely. And that tension was really hard. You know, when I was in it, I caved. I did. I bought like 8 items, according to my blog. I don't really remember them. I probably don't even have them anymore. But, you know, then I think too, those moments where I caved and I bought things. I remember once I bought a dress, like a little summer dress at Target, because we were hosting a garden party and I had tried on everything in my closet and nothing was working. But the thing is I found this new cute little green dress and felt like I could now do the garden party. So it was clearly, just like we talked about with Jenny and our children on Monday, I was using clothing as worth. You know, I was attributing all of my confidence to, and how I felt about myself, to this new dress. And it was, I remember this dress too, because it was that one trip to Target that I think I bought 3 things. Like once I bought the dress, I was like, well, I guess I broke my fast. I might as well buy another shirt and a pair of shoes while I'm here. So it was that real moment of weakness.
I think it's okay to recognize that we have those. Just like I've talked about before, when you're trying to change into a healthier way of living and eating, if you have a day where you eat 2 pieces of cake, try not to then also eat 16 cookies. Try to just say, whoops, okay, so I ate 2 pieces of cake. No big deal. Tomorrow's a new day. Because, right. And it's the same with clothing. Evaluate it. Maybe you can just say like, God, I'm feeling so sad. Or I know when it comes to the water party, you and I typically do splurge on a dress, or I've recently gotten into renting from the Rent the Runway app, but even still, just splurging a little on something like that, because we want to feel powerful and worthy of this like big event that's super fun. You know, we want to feel a certain thing that maybe we're not feeling after working hard for months on it, you know. So evaluating that, because sometimes that's okay to be to then buy something, but at least then you know that you're trying to fill this hole. And also being able to say, this isn't actually going to help, but you know, if it gives me a 5-minute boost in confidence, here we go. Great.
Yeah, exactly. And I've always loved clothes. I've always loved, you know, just fashion in general. And this was a 1-year long fast. Like I have gone back to, you know, not putting those limits on myself as a clothing shopper. But I think you're exactly right. You know, you just need to kind of figure it out, like figure out where, what works for you, and check yourself if you need to check, but you know, you might not need to. And so that's fantastic too.
Absolutely. So what surprised you about your year-long experiment?
Honestly, the response from others was by far the biggest surprise of this entire kind of experiment. I was invited on a local TV talk show.
I remember.
Yeah, because it was so crazy that this woman wasn't buying clothes for a year. I had a photo shoot for, I had written the article for the Healthy Living magazine, but then like another newspaper wanted to publish, you know, a version of the story as well. And like, that just astounded me that like, this was at all newsworthy. I was constantly surprised, like people would literally bring me bags of their cast off clothing because they felt sorry for me.
I think I was one of those people. I'm so sorry. It sounds so silly now that you say it.
But you did. I think you gave me a pair of brown boots. I think I was like looking for brown boots or wishing I could buy them. And then you showed up with them. So it just was so funny though. I thought, you know, people were really like, whoa, she's doing this. And I was blogging about it. And so I was putting it out there. And like I said, mostly because I thought it was a fascinating experiment, but I wanted to be accountable also. But it was just the response from people. It was amazing. People were just like, how are you doing this? The woman who interviewed me on TV, she was like, it was during the winter or colder months. And she was like, I can give you extra sweaters. Do you want some of my sweaters?
No, I don't. That's the whole point.
So that was fascinating. Just the shock and awe of this experiment.
What's really funny is for those who haven't met you yet, haven't had the opportunity to meet you, is you're small in stature. Like, you're tall, but you're naturally thin. And because this was in the winter when she interviewed you, you tend to, I don't know why, but like, even get thinner. It's like, you're so cold. And can I help warm you up?
Just like shaking, probably.
So the image is amazing, but that is really, really funny. So give us some lessons, right? So other than the fact that, like, maybe just don't go on TV and tell people this and have bags sent to you, what can our listeners, like, pull from your experience if they don't want to go a year without buying anything?
Well, you really hit the nail on the head earlier when you were talking about just basically owning less but paying more for what you buy, and meaning just buy higher quality. So it lasts longer, it's mendable, you know, when it does start to fray or something, it can be fixed very easily and still its life can be lengthened then. So I think that's one way that I have for sure changed as a consumer, is that my closet, it still has way too many clothes in it, but it's my collection is smaller and it's of better quality. I wouldn't say I'm spending any more money in total on clothes, but I'm buying things that are going to last a lot longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think too, we talked about this with Jenny, shop your own closet. Kind of check out things that maybe you can wear in a different way, or maybe just that you forgot that was in there, and shop your friend's closet. So, like, get together with each other, do a swap, things like that.
Yeah. And you know what you can do? What I started to do is I have a note in my notes file on my phone. Mm-hmm. And if a friend of mine wears something that's really cute that I'm like, oh, I should ask her to borrow that for something, mm-hmm. I keep that on file. And then when I know that mm-hmm. I have an event coming up and I'm like, hey, could I borrow that? It's there so that I remember, you know? So that's another way to kind of shop your friend's closet.
Absolutely. And just that whole idea of borrowing clothes, like, what was great about college, right? Or high school is that you didn't have any money. And so you were constantly, like, using what you had access to, which was your roommate's closet. And it was a great, like, not even an intentional way to be a better steward of the earth, or, you know, build community. It just was a natural thing that we all did. I think that especially with kids, you have to be really intentional about planning. You know, I think that's the impulse purchase sort of amplifies when you have a cart full of children and, you know, you might not have the time or the patience to really shop for the things that you want to and you need. So you're just kind of throwing things in the cart just so you can get out.
Right.
So I think, you know, with kids, just maybe at the beginning of the year, is the beginning of the school year is a good time to just sort of sit out and plan your clothing budget and think, like, okay, what do you need this year? How much are you going to grow? How much should we spend as a result of that? You know,
right.
Just being more intentional and planning.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to say that you were kind of a refashionista before this, but you took it to new levels since your clothing fast and beyond. You continue to inspire me with your ability to pick great items from the thrift stores.
You know, I love it. I have so much fun. And I'm always there, like, thinking I should get something for someone else because I don't need it. But I'm just like, oh, but they look so cute. And if we just, like, cut off the bottom and then added a belt. Like, but it's true, like, refashioning. So there's this blog I love. It's called Refashionista. We'll link it in the show notes. And that's kind of her shtick. Like, almost every day she posts this outfit. So she finds something for a dollar at the thrift store and then chops off the bottom and adds a sash, and it's adorable.
That's so cute. Amazing. That's amazing.
Going along with just spending more on less, you know, buying wool and cotton is a really great idea, because those are fibers that are not oil dependent and they're also biodegradable. So if you're thinking about the environment, those are two to look for. And then you can look in your closet and some of the things that you might feel that you're over or that you're done with, they might just need tailoring. So, you know, this isn't a new idea, and the Francophile and all of us has already thought of this, but take things to the tailor and just, you know, get a few things really fitted to your body. And it's amazing how much better you feel about that article of clothing when it actually fits you.
Yeah, that's such a good idea. When you were talking about this, when you're going through the clothing fast, and then when we were talking about this podcast, what I was thinking was, like, I know most people are concerned with where their food's coming from, where their water's coming from. You know, a lot of them are talking about organic foods and non-GMO. And, you know, there are certain things that are on our conscious because the world's talking about them, the news is talking about them, all of this stuff. It's getting high publicity. But I feel like clothing is certainly one of those that is getting more traction, like you talked about, but it's still not high on the list for some reason. Mm-hmm. And so I do think it's important. The message is there. One, that you are more than the clothes you're buying and the clothes that you're wearing. Like, those are just kind of window dressing, you know, mm-hmm. like working on the soul is a far better use of your time. But also, just like, if you do care about the environment, if you do care about being a good steward of the earth and the people who are working to produce your garments, like, this is a big deal and it needs further research and discovery.
Mm-hmm. I agree, Tessie. And it was a great experience. I'm still talking about it. It's still something I feel really passionately about. And so I wrote a really long dare
today. I know you did. You know what? I read it and I'm like, yes, speak on it. So speak on it and tell our mama bears a dare.
Right. We usually call this like a dare, but it's more of like a treatise today. So hold on.
You're feeling patriotic. It's fine. Go on.
All right. So, Mama Bears, we dare you to no longer be at the mercy of what the stores want you to buy. We dare you to be a consumer for you by your own standards and your own needs. We dare you to think about your consumption and the place of things in your life. Ask yourself whether or not you're comfortable with your closet or the amount of time you spend shopping for, buying, and managing the things in your life. Maybe you've got it down. If you do, then celebrate your style and tell your friends about how you've arrived where you're at. If you're feeling overwhelmed by the opportunity to buy a t-shirt or a summer dress for less than a trip to Chipotle each time you walk into a big box empire, check yourself and check the label. Maybe give yourself some guidelines to guide your consumption. At the end of the day, we can't blame Target for their fast, cheap, adorable clothes. We're responsible for the choices that we make and where we spend our money and what we buy. We dare you to be a thoughtful consumer and, if necessary, take back the power of your purse. We have the opportunity to impact the lives of other human beings as well as the amount of resources consumed with every dollar we spend. This is a first world privilege that directly affects our neighbors across the planet. Mama Bears, dare to discover a new style, one that's both mindful and fabulous. Both ideals that scream good taste.
Bravo! You should have been one of the founding mothers here. I mean, that was a good little treat. I like that.
Thank you. Just call me Abigail or Eliza. Either one would be great. Eliza!
There it is. Oh, Mama Bears, thank you so much for coming with us. Tell us what you think. We really, really want to know, like we said in the intro. Your comments mean a lot to us because then we know. I mean, we can see that people are listening, but when nobody talks, we wonder if we're just talking and no, it's not resonating with anyone. So when you comment on our Facebook, our Instagram, or you tweet at us, it just makes us realize, yes, more stuff like this, or no, get off your soapbox, get back to interviewing cool women.
That's right. Either way, we want to know.
Yeah, but please don't do that. No. And yeah, or you can email us if you, if you're a little shy to post on social media. We totally get that. MamaBearDares@gmail.com. And we've heard from some of you who have a mama bear in mind that you want us to interview. We would love more recommendations. So email us there and check out our website. We have a lot of cool stuff on there. MamaBearDaresPodcast.com. It has a, the complete show notes, so you can check out where the book is, any other articles in Leslie's blog that we talked about here. And finally, rate and review us on iTunes. It just feels so good when you do it.
Yes, and it means so much. I mean, we want to do this. We want to make this a thing that is also sustainable. And so please, we're not asking for money, like just a review, just like maybe exactly. 4 or 5 stars. Like, it's up to you. We'd love it.
Most of nice 5 words. 5 stars. 5 stars.
Oh. Now I've heard it all.
All right, Mama Bears, have a great week. Thanks for listening.
Have a great week.
You know, we get a vote for our dollars, and that's big. That's something you can do right now to change it.
Say that again, but say we get to vote with our dollars.
Oh, what did I say?
You said for our dollars.
Okay.
Hooray, and- American dollars! Hooray!
We do always vote for our American dollars.
You got my vote, dollar.
None of that Euro business. Stay with the dollar.
Right. For less than a trip to Chipotle each time you walk into a big box. Did I say it wrong? Chipotle. Totally.
Chipotle. It was the cutest.
Chipotle. Because I don't really ever go to Chipotle, but I felt like you. Which and Sarah.
I know. That's insane. It's delicious.
Okay.